listening to the Daily Daily Caller podcast on iTunes and thedailycaller.com. Alrighty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to the Daily Daily Caller podcast. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. It is the 10th of September, 2018. Tomorrow is the day we'll never forget, September 11th. Again, falling on a Tuesday. We'll talk about that more tomorrow, but just want to give you a heads up in case you want to make some special arrangements for yourself. But I want to also mention before we get started, the book contest. I'm still working on trying to get a guest this week, which is weird to put the word still in front of it since it's the first day of the week, but that's how we roll. And by we, I mean me. I'm not going to say who I'm trying to get, but hopefully we'll get somebody who has a book coming out either this week or next. And then next week, I'm working on trying to get a couple people this week. Next week, I hope it pans out because it would be super cool to get the person I'm trying to and dealing with their people to try and get on the show. And hopefully we'll be able to get you some signed books you can possibly win. But again, you should buy all these books anyway. And then you just have the signed one you keep in mint condition. I'm right now packing up my book collection, my signed book collection, which is over 1,000 books now. And we're moving next weekend, which is going to be absolute hell. We're moving about 5 miles from here to a bigger house because we got a baby coming in a month. And packing is just the worst thing. But packing up 1,000 books, I'm glad for the first time in my life, I am using movers. It's going to cost a pretty penny, but I don't have to move a boxes of 1,000 books. Of course, my wife has about 1,000 books of her own, but hers aren't signed. I could just throw them out for all I care. Mine are the cool ones. But anyway, if you want to enter to win a signed copy of my book, Outrage Incorporated, Outrage Inc., INC, How the Liberal Mob Ruined Science Journalism in Hollywood, just send me an email with that request in the subject line. You want to win the signed book by me, email Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. Or if you have purchased it, or if you want to ensure that you can have a signed book, go to Amazon, buy the book. It's like less than $17. Tell me, email me at that same address saying, hey, I bought your stinking book, you loser. When am I going to get my book signed? And while I can't sign your book, I can and will and promise to mail you a signed book plate, which is a little sticker that they use, that the publishers use. You sign it, and you peel off the back, and you put it right in the book, and it's like nothing ever changed. Like, it's like I was there in your house signing your book, oddly, on a sticker on the first page. But where you stick the sticker is up to you. But if you have bought my book and you want a signed book plate, I'll happily mail you one of those. It's a lot cheaper to send. I think stamps are like 49 cents now or something like that. Anyway, lots of stuff to get to. If you want to do any of that stuff, and stay tuned to find out who the guest is this week, if we're going to have a guest or not. Lots of great books coming out, lots of great authors, and they're all kind of clustered in the next month, which is great, but it also sucks because if you want to talk to somebody and then somebody else has the same book or a book coming out the same day, and you're like, oh, crap, who can I talk to? Maybe you have them fight it out in the hallway, and then the winner comes in bloodied, and when we have them on the show. I don't think they're probably going to go for that, but I might propose it to some of them because some of the choices are going to be tough. And speaking of tough choices, did you know that the American patients in this country are subsidizing health care in foreign countries? And you think, well, what are you talking about? We sending them money? No, not that directly. They're more sly about it. They're more slick about it. Countries with socialized health care are forcing American patients to subsidize the rest of the world through the cost of our prescription drugs. Here's how it works. Americans produce life-saving and life-changing new medicines. We are the world's leader in that, hands down. But foreign governments don't want to pay market prices for the drugs that American companies and Americans develop. If they refuse, those foreign countries threaten to steal the patents and manufacture the drugs themselves. Now, these drugs take, on average, about 10 years and cost upwards of $1 billion to create. And that doesn't even factor in the drugs that only lasted 5 years in trials and cost $500 million to make. Drugs, developing of them, is incredibly expensive and time-consuming. So when these countries threaten to steal the patents and manufacture the drugs themselves, if the American companies don't cave to their artificially low price demands, that is a problem for Americans. We end up having to cover the costs because the research and development has to continue. We want new drugs. We want new treatments. The only way to get that is for these companies to make a profit on their investment. And if foreign governments are saying you can't do that here, we'll steal your patent otherwise, well, you're given the choice. It will take something or nothing. They have to choose something. Now, for years, politicians have been complaining about this, but nobody's been really doing anything about it. Presidents, senators, and congressmen, oh, they hold their hearings and they make their good speeches. But what have they done? Not much. Well, President Trump is actually fighting to end this foreign free riding in the prescription drug market. That would mean lower costs for us. You can learn all about this important work and fight. It's going to be a tough fight. You might have to get involved. You can learn all about it at conservative.org. The American Conservative Union is leading the fight on this. It's conservative.org. It's really easy to remember. Go there and get educated. It might not impact you right now, but someday it will. We're all going to get old. Sadly, we're all going to get sick. It's time to fight is now, and we finally have a politician in Washington, D.C., a president of the United States, willing to stand up for American and American companies. Go to conservative.org. Anyway, the news of the weekend. It wasn't a super exciting, action-packed news weekend, to be perfectly honest with you. Most of what happened that was of interest happened on Friday, when Barack Obama returned to the national scene with a speech in Illinois. You knew it was coming. You knew the president, the former president, was not going to be able to leave the stage. He's too young, and that's not a knock. It's just a fact. He's too young. You can't ride off into the sunset and not do anything in your profession when you're in your 50s and you're done. He's set for life. Him and Michelle got a $60 million book deal, joint book deal. Only slightly less than my book deal, by the way. But they got a $60 million book deal. And I talked to my publisher about this. I said, how in the hell can, because I understand the economics a little bit of publishing. I said, how in the hell are they going to, is the publisher ever hoping to earn back $60 million that they spent? And he explained it to me, and it seems pretty likely that they'll do it. Because, you know, most books sell by country. There are very few in the nonfiction world, although the case could be made that the Obama's books are going to be fiction books. But in the nonfiction world, it's much easier if a book hits big. Look at what J.K. Rowling did, for example. If your books are selling around the world, being translated into a million different languages and what have you, most political books tend to only apply to the countries in which they're published. So it's a tougher haul. Barack Obama, former president, all former presidents are a different sort of cat. They have interests in them around the world. Now, what's going to happen is, I'm just making up the numbers here, by the way, except for the $60 million that was reported, is some company, some German publisher is going to come and say, hey, we want to buy the right. Somebody criticized my French accent, by the way, via email. They want to buy the rights to publish in Germany. They want to translate it into German and hit the German market. And there are tens of millions of people in Germany. There's a market there. Most of them aren't going to sit down and read an English language book. And whoever the publisher is for the Obama books are not going to go, well, we'll do it. We'll incur the extra expense and we'll take the chance and try and figure out marketing in Germany. No, they'll go, okay, $3 million or $5 million or whatever, and you can have the exclusive rights in Germany. And you can translate it into German and your heart's content, and you can sell as many copies as you want. That is part of how, now you imagine all the languages on the planet. A lot of countries not worth publishing, nor are they particularly interested in a book from Barack Obama. But there are a lot of countries around the world where people are interested in a book by Barack Obama. And if you put up $5 million or $3 or $2 or $1 million if you're a small country with a small amount of people speaking your language, you could probably earn that back and then some. And they might buy the book by Barack Obama or Michelle Obama. So that is how the publisher is going to make a huge chunk of that money back. I still think it's personally a scam. It's part prestige. Publishing houses tend to be liberal. They want to have the Obama feather in their cap, but and they're willing to take a loss to sort of thank them, to make sure that the literati in New York, for example, know that they're on the team, that they're down with the cause, and so they've got the Obamas, plus I imagine it will get them invites to certain things that they otherwise wouldn't have gotten invited to. So that's how that works. But Barack Obama was never going to ride off into the sunset. Forgive that tangent, by the way. He's just too young, and he's been involved in politics for the entirety of his adult life. You can't just hang up your spurs at 55 or whatever he was and say, all right, have a good day. I don't even think he was 55. So you knew his inability to leave the national stage. It's just, I don't know that anybody could do it. George W. Bush has done it. George W. Bush was about 10 years older than Barack Obama, and he's been kind of a worthless former president. He paints. Big deal, he paints. He could have, I don't know, been involved in some things, cared about something enough to get involved. He's still involved with the Wounded Warriors behind the scenes, but if even former presidents can command an audience and have a little sliver of bully pulpit that goes with them where they can draw attention to things that otherwise people wouldn't pay attention to, George W. Bush just seems content to sweat his head off in Texas. Whatever. It's his choice. But Barack Obama, we knew, was going to be different. We just didn't know when and how. He sort of made allusions to returning to the national stage and fully involved in politics. He's given speeches, one notably in South Africa. Weirdly, he didn't mention the land seizure from white farmers and the threat to kill them down there. He had nothing but good things to say about South Africa. But we knew it was only a matter of time before he returned to this country in full force, because he has an ego that needs to be fed. I rewatched Guardians of the Galaxy 2 over the weekend, where Kurt Russell plays a character named Ego. He's a planet and sort of a god-type character. They call him a celestial named Ego. And I saw that and I'm thinking, that's kind of like Barack Obama. He has a massive ego, and I don't fault him for that. If you're elected president of the United States, only 45 people have ever been elected president of the United States. You don't do it because you've got self-esteem issues. You don't do it because you have body issues and you sit around and you're afraid to talk to people. No, you are quite the opposite, as a matter of fact. There isn't a president who doesn't have an ego, and I dare predict that there won't be a president who doesn't have a massive ego that needs to be fed. And when you leave the office, the ego's still hungry. And Barack Obama's young enough, and he is a really hungry ego. He thinks that the world needs him. He believes that the country made a mistake when Donald Trump was elected, when Donald Trump beat his hand-picked successor. He really thought they screwed up. And so they have to find a way to make sure that he gets his ego fed. And he believes he can make a difference. Now, I, for one, welcome Barack Obama back on the national stage, to be perfectly honest with you. Please come back, President Obama. Campaign more frequently. Now, you're sitting there and you're thinking, Derek, what the hell are you talking about? You've been rambling here for 10 minutes, and now you're saying you're glad that Barack Obama is back on the national stage? What is wrong with you? He is a hell of a campaigner. Yes, he is. For himself, he is an exceptional campaigner, Barack Obama was. He won the presidency. He came After 2 years in the Senate and won the United States presidency, he had no accomplishments in the Senate. He had no accomplishments in the Illinois State Senate. But still, he managed to win the presidency because he is a hell of a campaigner. And then after 2 years in the White House, he started what would be the greatest decimation of a political party in history. The Democrats lost the House in 2010. The only reason that they retained the Senate in 2012 was because Republicans had nominated some morons in a couple of states. Todd Akin comes to mind. Then in 2014, Republicans finally did take the United States Senate. More than 1,000 seats across the fruited plain that were held by Democrats when Barack Obama came to office were held by Republicans when Barack Obama left office. He was the most effective chairman of the Republican National Committee ever to not collect a check from that organization. So I, for one, welcome Barack Obama back to the national stage, because while he will be speaking to adoring crowds at fundraisers and at rallies across the country, the rest of the country will be paying attention too. We will see clips, and Americans across the country will be reminded of the stagnant economy that Barack Obama brought us. Remember, 2% was the new norm. We can't expect 3% growth anymore. That was just impossible. Therefore, the 2% growth is just going to be the new norm, and we're going to have to find a way to adapt. And then throughout his entire year, there wasn't a year where we had 3% growth. The first time that has ever happened for a president, and it was the slowest recovery in history. And while Barack Obama on the stage, I could play you the audio, but I don't want to bore you to death. Barack Obama on the stage from his speech tried to take credit for the economy, saying, well, you got to remember when that recovery started, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I remember when that recovery started, and I remember that you never really got it going, Mr. President. We leveled out in spite of your efforts. Remember the $1 trillion stimulus? Shovel-ready jobs weren't as shovel-ready as I thought. That little joke that cost us $1 trillion. That $1 trillion, by the way, was foisted on the Bush administration. This is a little trick that Democrats and their dishonest cronies in the media pull. The first $1 trillion deficit was for fiscal year 2008. And that has allowed Democrats and their fellow travelers in the media to say that George W. Bush brought us the first $1 trillion deficit. That is not true. Now, the national debt had been trillions of dollars for years, about $10 trillion when Barack Obama came in. But the deficit is the annual deficit in the budget. Now, how can they make that laughable argument that the first $1 trillion deficit occurred on George W. Bush's watch? Well, it's very simple. Fiscal years end on September 30th and begin on October 1st. Presidents are responsible for the budgets that they pass for the coming fiscal year. The last Bush budget was for fiscal year 2008, which started in October of 2008. When Barack Obama came into office, one of the first things they did in the first few months of his administration was pass the stimulus bill, adding $1 trillion to that year's current fiscal budget. That year's current fiscal budget in 2009 was fiscal year 2008. It was under George W. Bush, even though he didn't have anything to do with that $1 trillion. That's how stupid our accounting system is. That's how screwed up our accounting system is. So Democrats can say, well, there was a $1 trillion deficit in 2008. No. In fiscal year 2008, yes. In calendar year 2008, no. And the only reason yes in fiscal year 2008 was because Barack Obama and the Democrats who controlled everything rammed through the stimulus and put put it on George W. Bush's bill. He couldn't have stopped it. He didn't have anything to do with it. In fact, the deficit was going to be pretty low that year, fiscal year 2008. That helped embolden Democrats to piss away even more of our money. So Barack Obama wants credit for the great, quote-unquote, economy that he left Donald Trump. He thinks that he helped turn the economy around. But if you just look at the economic growth, Barack Obama came pretty close one year to getting 3% growth. In the year 2015, Barack Obama scored 2.9% growth. And you think, well, that's good news. Things are going well. It's going to be awesome. Let's go to 2016. The economic growth rate, the GDP growth rate in 2016 was only 1.6%. For those of you playing the home game, that's almost a 50% drop in the economic growth rate. A significant, significant drop off from the previous year. Barack Obama doesn't mention that. He doesn't talk about 2016, even though you try to say, well, that's because of Donald Trump. No, no, Donald Trump was elected in November of 2016, and the markets did nothing but go up, by the way. But the whole world assumed that Hillary Clinton was going to win. The economy was sputtering because of the weight of the regulations and the taxes and the heavy hand of government after 8 years of Obama, and in anticipation of four at least more years of heavy-handed weight regulation and tax increases from Hillary Diane Rodham Clinton Jr. III. So, the last year of the Obama administration was a clogged toilet. Now, Democrats are out there clutching their pearls saying, how dare you speak of our God this way? Heresy, heresy in the first. Well, take a look back at the Bush years' economic growth. If you get to crop off the last year of a presidency, then the Bush presidency was pretty good. But the 2008 crash made it look pretty bad. And then Barack Obama spent the next 8 years running around going, well, I've inherited the worst economy ever. And it was just because of the disastrous policies of the Bush administration. Yeah, they kept things going pretty well for 7 years. I would have expected a much bigger drop in the economy after the September 11th attacks. But we managed to weather that pretty well. But the housing crisis, where banks were forced to make loans to people who had no hope in hell of paying them back under the name of compassion and democratic regulations and threats, that was much worse for the economy than the terrorist attacks of September 11th. Democrats caused that. So just keep that in mind. As Barack Obama returns to the stage, most people will not be reminded of what the media wants them to be reminded of. They will be reminded of the high unemployment. They will be reminded of the four dead Americans abandoned in Benghazi and the fact that that administration lied to their families and lied to the country about that. We'll remember that. We'll remember that they forced the sale of guns to Mexican drug cartels and didn't bother telling anybody. We'll remember that the IRS was weaponized and sicked on Americans who committed the crime of thinking differently from the liberals. We'll remember Solyndra. We'll remember that $1 trillion stimulus that didn't do anything except make Barack Obama's cronies richer. We'll remember all of it. So I, for one, say welcome back to the national stage, Barack Obama. Yes, the people will cheer at your rallies. The people will show up at your events. And Democrats will cut checks to the candidates you support. But I draw attention to Senator Martha Coakley. Remember her? Oh, no, you don't remember her because she wasn't a United States senator. She lost the special election in Massachusetts to replace Ted Kennedy, to Scott Brown, a Republican, which people thought would never happen, a Republican from Massachusetts. And of course, there are examples all throughout Barack Obama's 8 years, up to and including Hillary Clinton, by the way, of people who Barack Obama campaigned for that got glowing media coverage because of it, and who ultimately were rejected by the American voters because we saw what Barack Obama was doing. Yes, personally, he is wildly popular with the Democratic base, and I would say wildly popular with the American people from a likability standpoint. He reads a teleprompter like it's an Olympic event and he's going for the gold. But those words ring hollow. His words will remind people, and the promises he will make on behalf of candidates he will campaign for will remind the American people of his failures. There are 5 million people in this country who lost their health insurance after being assured that they never would by Barack Obama. Those 5 million people know at least 20 million people. They'll be reminded too, because those 5 million people hearing Barack Obama making campaign promises will be pissed off enough to tell their friends about, I can't believe I'm listening to this guy and he's making more promises. He's a fraud. He's a this, he's a that. And he is every single one of those things. So welcome back, Barack Obama. Remind people of your tenure as president. If you want to talk about the tone of your presidency, we could even dive into that. If I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon. We got our own problems down in Ferguson, Missouri. Blah, 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 blah. All the garbage that the man said. So don't be upset that Barack Obama is reemerging on the national stage. Welcome him back with open arms. He was the most effective elector of Republicans since Ronald Reagan. Okay, what else is in the news? The Kavanaugh hearing ended mercifully over the weekend. Oh, the Democrats dragged out John Dean's corrupt ass to try and testify against Judge Brett Kavanaugh. Nobody cared. Nobody paid attention to it. It was another good thing that Barack Obama did was distract from all these liberal witnesses up on Capitol Hill whining about Brett Kavanaugh. Just didn't pay any attention to it. But I do want to, the Senate is expected, the Judiciary Committee is expected to vote on the Kavanaugh nomination on Thursday. As we learned from my friend Brian Darling on Friday, there is a procedural tactic that Democrats can use and likely will use that will delay that 1 week because they're children. Everybody up on Capitol Hill is children and they play these stupid little games. So they're going to delay it by a week, because that's just how it works. But I want to point out something Senator Kamala Harris did over the weekend, which was incredibly tacky and corrupt. In other words, it's progressive. She sent out a tweet. She's the one who was asking Brett Kavanaugh, did you ever speak to anybody who ever worked at this law firm about the Mueller investigation? And he said, I don't know everybody who works at that law firm. There's like hundreds of lawyers that work there. Well, have you? Did you talk about it? It was a ridiculous question. We played it on the show, The Exchange. She tweeted out a video. Now, it's only 10 seconds long. I'm going to play you the clip, and then I'm going to read you the whole thing. And when I play you this clip, keep in mind this is 10 seconds chosen by Senator Harris explicitly for a purpose. Now, Democrats hate themselves edited video. They hate themselves edited anything. Whenever James O'Keefe comes out with some new sting operation, the left always says, well, these are heavily edited videos. We couldn't possibly understand what's going on. And the media talking point on the left, meaning on MSNBC and CNN, becomes immediately about how this video is edited. They edited this video. Yeah, geez, you sat down, you talked to somebody for 4 hours as they're telling you how to import children from third world countries for your child sex ring, and you cut that down to a half an hour to the gist of it, and the media goes, well, these are heavily edited videos, and Democrats go, those videos are heavily edited. And I would say, in what context is it good to be trying to help somebody import children for a child sex ring? Is there a context in which that's good? Because I can't envision one. I got a pretty creative imagination. I can't figure out a thing where you just go, oh, yeah, now I get it. That one sentence where he said, by the way, I'm going to give you advice on importing children for your child sex ring, but I'm doing it ironically as a bit of a sort of a Monty Python homage. No, no, that's not what happened. By the way, James O'Keefe released the transcripts of the whole thing. All the evidence was there on all of his stings, and everybody just goes, well, these are heavily edited videos. What I'm about to play you is heavily, heavily edited because it's 10 seconds long. Senator Harris chose this for a reason that I will get to in a second, but I just want you to know what she said about it first and what the topic is, talking about birth control and why in 2018 where adults on Capitol Hill, our elected representatives, are trying to scare people about birth control is beyond me. Buy birth control. Buy your own birth control. If you can't afford your own birth control, which ain't a whole hell of a lot of money, you can't afford to be having sex. Likely you can't afford to shower, so I'm not sure how you're having sex. But if you're having sex and you haven't showered, and you can't afford birth control, your life is off the rails and you've made a series of horrible decisions and it's time to figure out what's wrong with you. But Senator Harris tweeted out, quote, Kavanaugh chooses his words very carefully, and this is a dog whistle for going after birth control. He was nominated for the purpose of taking away a woman's constitutionally protected right to make her own health care decisions. Make no mistake, this is about punishing women, end quote. Senator Harris, the junior senator from the state of California with an IQ lower than her shoe size. This is what she said. This is the 10-second video she sent out with that note.
Filling out the form would make them complicit in the provision of the abortion-inducing drugs that they were, as a religious matter, objected to.
Now, you see, that's what Kamala Harris wanted her followers to hear, to believe, that he was talking about birth control as abortion-inducing drugs. Now, whatever you think of birth control is your own personal opinion. But that's not what Brett Kavanaugh was saying. In fact, Brett Kavanaugh wasn't speaking for Brett Kavanaugh. Brett Kavanaugh was talking about the Catholic Priests for Life, who sued to get an exception, a religious exception, from Obamacare under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. The entire quote from Brett Kavanaugh doesn't begin with filling out the form would make them complicit in the provision of the abortion-inducing drugs that they were, as a religious matter, objected to. The entire quote is, it was a technical matter of filling out a form in that case, but they said filling out the form would make them complicit in the provision of the abortion-inducing drugs that they were, as a religious matter, objected to. See the difference? The words, particularly, you can forget about the first sentence, but they said, boom. Right after, but they said, is when the Kamala Harris video started. She chose that because if you start off the video saying, but they said, and then he says something that somebody else said, it's no longer Brett Kavanaugh speaking. You, as somebody who has an IQ above the average 5-year-old, would recognize that he is talking about an argument in a case that somebody else made. Kamala Harris doesn't want you to know that. Now, if the case against Brett Kavanaugh is so weak that Democrats have to resort to this sort of crap and the other claims, the various claims that Brett Kavanaugh committed perjury, which he did not, even liberal legal scholars, Vox.com, tried to find somebody to say a liberal scholar to accuse Brett Kavanaugh of committing perjury and they couldn't do it. If you have to resort to those sorts of tactics, that you can't use anything the guy actually said to make your case, maybe, just maybe, you don't have a case to begin with. So we'll find out by Thursday. The Democrats will likely say, no, no, we're going to throw a temper tantrum and make this vote wait an extra week. Then Brett Kavanaugh will be passed out of the Senate Judiciary Committee next week, probably next Thursday. And then it's a vote on the floor by the end of the month. I think the 26th might be the day that they're looking at right now. But and barring anything major or dramatic, and I say this with caution, if I remember the Clarence Thomas confirmation hearings properly, Democrats will stoop to just about anything to try and win when it comes to a Supreme Court nomination. They couldn't come up with anything with Neil Gorsuch, but that doesn't mean they won't try to do it now, since the stakes, they admit, are that much higher. In the Clarence Thomas hearings, they had concluded. Clarence Thomas was well on his way to confirmation, and then between the end of the hearings and the full or the Senate Judiciary Committee voting, that's when the Anita Hill allegations came out. Now, they were garbage. He told a dirty joke. Who put this pubic hair on my Coke can? Oh, and all that garbage. It was nothing. But they found somebody willing to come out and smear him. Democrats are desperately looking, and I guarantee you right now, as you listen to this, no matter what time of day you listen to it, Democrats are scouring the country for somebody willing to say something about Brett Kavanaugh in a negative light so that they can come back and say, stop the presses. We have to have another hearing. That's when the Anita Hill, there was a special session. They'd already ended the hearings, and they called another hearing on Clarence Thomas with Anita Hill a week later. They want to do the same thing. Democrats always return to the same playbook. That's how they roll. They're not original people. In many ways, they stick with what works. Just hasn't worked with the Supreme Court. So don't spike the football on the 5-yard line. Wait until it's all done to exhale. Be on guard. Something will come up. It'll probably be minor. The best they've gotten on him is he likes baseball and bought baseball season tickets so far. But they're still looking. Well, they also found that he liked to drink in college. Big shock. Stop the presses. So don't celebrate before it's over. But it's looking pretty damn good. There's one last thing I want to play for you. It's about 50 seconds long. Senator Ben Sasse of Nebraska, he made the rounds this weekend. He was on Meet the Press. He was on with Jake Tapper on his Sunday show. And he's becoming the new John McCain in many ways. He's very critical of Republicans, particularly Donald Trump. But Ben Sasse hasn't been in the Senate all that long. Ben Sasse, while he seems like a really nice guy, and I like a lot of what Ben Sasse said when he talked about how Congress usurped its duties in his opening statement at the Kavanaugh hearings, it was something that I had been saying for years. I've interviewed Senator Mike Lee about this on several occasions back when I used to do radio, where they pass vague laws that say, well, then in a manner it'll be determined by the secretary. They'll figure out how to do X, Y, or Z. That is Congress shirking their duties. The growing regulatory state and bureaucracy in Washington, D.C. is fed in large part by Congress passing vague laws, passing the buck. So Ben Sasse has a great point on that. But when Ben Sasse made that opening statement, not only did my ego force me to point out that I had been writing and speaking about this for about 5 years now, I also wondered, where's the legislation, Senator Sasse? Where is your legislation to change this? Where is your push to change this? Now, maybe you've said it before, I don't know, but this is the first I've really heard you really get out there and be passionate about this. So I welcome you to the fight. I'm just curious what you plan to do while you're here. To that end, Senator Sasse tweeted out over the weekend that he had thought many times, and he'd said that he thought many times about leaving the Republican Party because Republicans are so awful. They're not doing anything. They're not taking things seriously the way that he would like them to. And he doesn't like Donald Trump. I think he likes Donald Trump, but I don't think he likes Donald Trump's tweets. Whatever the case, my question is, Senator Sasse, where is your solution? I get you're very good at pointing out the problem, but if you have cancer, how many doctors do you need to tell you that you have cancer? If you have an infection, if you have a flu, if you're running the fever, how many doctors do you need to tell you that, hey, you've got a fever before you believe them, before you do something about that? I would suspect you really only need one, but maybe you go for a second opinion, especially if it's a more serious diagnosis. It's a matter of personal choice. But complaining about it, bitching and moaning and whining and pissing is great. You can draw attention to the issue. But then what do you do with that attention, Senator Sasse? So Jake Tapper asked Ben Sasse about, well, why don't you leave the Republican Party? You want to be an independent senator? There's already two of them. You can still caucus with Republicans. You won't gum up the works or anything, but they really want him to leave the Republican Party. I don't know if he really wants to leave the Republican Party or he just wants the attention now that there's a void in the media. The media need a Republican to love. Used to be John McCain. He's no longer with us. So Ben Sasse is throwing his hat into the ring. I cut the question out. The clip would be too long, and you don't need to hear Jake Tapper's voice. The question is, well, why don't you leave the Republican Party if you have problems with the Republican Party, Senator? Listen to this very long answer, and this is my criticism of Senator Sasse. If you can find an answer in his answer, which is 51.343 seconds long, if you can find an answer in there, I can't give you anything, but I'll give you my my respect and gratitude, because all he does is toss a word salad here. He avoids the question. He avoids the answer, and he never offers up a solution. Again, we got the problem. What's your solution, Senator? You can't be a leader if the way you lead is bitching about a lack of leaders. That's not leading. Here's Senator Sasse.
Yeah, so I'm one of about eight people in the U.S. Senate who's never been a politician before, and I think I've been saying for 3 years that I conceive of myself as an independent conservative who caucuses with the Republicans, but frankly, neither of these parties have a long-term vision for the future of the country. You know, 10 years from now, where are we going to be in the future of work when young people are disrupted out of jobs three times a decade? Future of war and cyber, the collapse of community. Like, there's massive stuff happening in America, and these parties are really pretty content to do 24-hour news cycles screaming at each other. The main thing that the Democrats are for is being anti-Republican and anti-Trump, and the main thing Republicans are for is being anti-Democrat and anti-CNN, and neither of these things are really worth getting out of bed in the morning for. I think we should be talking about where the country's going to be in 10 years. So I've been saying for a long time that these parties need to reform and have a future-focused vision, and we're not there yet.
Again, he's very good at defining the problem, but he offers no solution in there, at least not one that I heard. We need people to do this. We need people to do that. We've got to do this. We've got to do that. You're a United States senator, man. There are only 100 of you. Where is your legislation? And why aren't you out there if you have this legislation hammering it home on an hourly basis? Why aren't you making the case for your solutions rather than your case for your diagnosis? We got the diagnosis. It's bad. Yes, nobody is addressing the crushing coming bankruptcy of entitlements or what to do about it. Nobody's talking about it. There isn't anybody in either party, really, of any importance willing to stick their necks out on that one. Where is your neck, Senator Sasse? We all know there is a problem. If we pay attention, we all know there is a problem. You were elected to solve problems. Complaining about how the 99 other people you work with aren't interested in solving the problem isn't a solution to the problem. Legislation is a solution to the problem. Or you could just travel the country and explain the problem so enough people get on board to recognize that it's a problem that maybe we could force the other 99. But only doing this sort of stuff when you know you can get media attention is not the way to make change. It's not how a leader doesn't lead only when the cameras are on, Senator. A leader leads all the time. The cameras have to fight to catch up. So I like Ben Sasse. I like what he says. I just wish he would do what he says. He can sit around and wait for somebody to come up with the solutions and try and get something done and talk about serious issues, or stop the presses. You could do it, Senator Sasse. Crazy idea, I know, but it is, you know, the job you ran for and were hired by the people of Nebraska to do. By the way, he also said that he wouldn't rule out running for president in 2020. As of right now, I'm not a fan. Because what is he doing? If between now and 2020 he actually gets off his ass and starts writing serious legislation, at a minimum he would force Republicans and President Obama or President Trump to address these issues, then we could see him as a future presidential candidate. But we got the diagnosis, Senator. We need the cure. We know what the cure is. It's wildly unpopular. Are you willing to stick your neck out and push for wildly unpopular things or spend your time and energy traveling the country and doing media appearances and speeches around the country, explaining to people why this is a problem and changing minds, maybe stopping this important stuff from being wildly unpopular and turning it to being, you know, popular? I don't know. I haven't seen it. I've seen you tweet a lot. I've seen you go on TV occasionally. I've seen you give one good speech from the Senate Judiciary Committee. What are you going to do next? Here's a hint. It doesn't really have anything to do with your party affiliation. If you want to be a leader, you can lead whether the letter after your name is an R, a D, or an I. But you have to lead. That's the key. Anyway, that is all the time we have today. I went incredibly long in the first segment. Apparently, you know, a couple of days off gets my mouth a-rambling, plus Barack Obama and all those good times. Tough to talk about. Anyway, thank you for sharing the show. Spread the word. Encourage your friends to subscribe to the podcast. Listen every day because you never know when there'll be a quiz. Email me, Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at dailycaller.com. Questions, comments. By the way, I read every email as best I can. They're on my phone. So if you could keep them brief, couple sentences, maybe a couple paragraphs. Some of you, I apologize. I respond to most of them. But the ones that are really incredibly long, like 800 words, I can't read that on my phone. I don't know what my password is to my email anymore, so I can't check it on my computer. And the likelihood of me getting a serious response to you is diminished as your word count gets exceedingly high. Ask me a couple of quick questions. I'm happy to respond. And then we can have a little back and forth as time permits. But all at once, no. Small meals throughout the day, not a big feast. Sounds dickish, I know. But that's just the way it is. I have the attention span of a newt. What can I say? Thank you for listening. Thanks for spreading the word, and we'll see you tomorrow.